Welcome back to episode one of the Service Management Social. Thank you for listening in and or watching this week as we've explored PR for service management. I've been joined by Amy Gavin, David Barrow, Rob York and Simon Reeves. This is part five and sadly the final chapter of this episode, but I hope you've all found this insightful and I can assure you there'll be plenty more to come. In this final one, guys, and today we'll be looking at, service change, transition and transformation against user adoption. So today we live in a world where if you have the financial backing, you can acquire highly sophisticated technology. However, a significant number of organizations find that their expected outcomes are not always achieved. Is it the fault of the technology and how it's been implemented? And what role does user adoption play in this equation? So I'll start with Simon on this one. Given some of the transformational kind of activity that's taken place in terms of kind of end user compute, desktop technologies, cloud services at EBRD, over to you to kind of tell us a little bit about that journey and how you know how and what you've implemented or what and how you've implemented new services and how they've been adopted by your organization.
I think firstly, I'd say don't buy highly sophisticated technology. Buy technology that's easy to use, because I think that's probably the first bit. Because if it's easy to use and requires low levels of adoption or no, high levels of adoption, but ease of use, easy training, easily consumable, models things that people use on a day-to-day basis, and people will automatically kind of be more interested. I use a great example with COVID. We talked about Zoom, episode 3 potentially, and going from 10 million users in December last year to 300 million plus probably in May of this year. And nobody's been trained on Zoom. Zoom is something everyone's just logged into. It's a consumerized tool that's been adopted by the enterprise. And I'll take that back to my own personal experience in using WebEx as a corporate tool and needing to be fed as a user, training material, understanding of functionality, integration with Outlook, integration with desktop applications. And actually it's a complex mix using essentially an off-the-shelf kind of conferencing tool. So service design and how we run a service and how users consume that service is really quite key. User training, user adoption, how we partner with the business for user forums, how we listen to their functional concerns, how we provide training on an ongoing basis, how we have adoption champions, both within IT, within the business, and we maintain communication. I think it's one of the things that people, service design, service transition, acceptance into service, I think it's one of the areas that is least mature from a framework perspective in the market. But I think it's one of the most mature in most IT service management organizations, because without that effective design and acceptance, the services will run quite poorly. And I think that's an interesting point in itself, why the market actually, and looking at some of the service, some of the tooling providers don't provide modules focusing on service design or service transition specifically. They're far more interested in the workflow of how it's managed. And that's because it's a really highly complicated, bespoke, tailored approach per service.
Fantastic. Rob, just as you take a sip of your coffee there, obviously at Newell, you was quite a sort of globally disparate organization in terms of locations, personnel, and the way in which those different kind of divisions and directorates within those kind of operated. So how did you take an approach to user adoption at group IT level, if you like, or at group level?
So the challenge there is that in an organization that's evolving, people, areas, parts of the business have looked to find their own points of how they're going to achieve things. And I think, as Simon said, you know, if it's intuitive and it's really straightforward to use, then, these days in technology, I think if people in the workplace aren't sure on things, they can go home if they've got kids. And you can have a three-year-old these days that can show you how to do TikTok and God knows what. I don't even venture anywhere near. But the point here is that they're evangelists, right? And the way that, whether it's the younger children or whether it's work colleagues, You know, when they're asked, they like being asked. We all like being asked, right? So therefore, you don't have to be an IT to turn around and say, this is great. And is it, you know, first of all, the fact someone's enthused takes you on. So it, globally, it's getting that across, first of all. And what I always call it is, you know, it's what's in it for you. Or if you're on the recipient, what's in it for me? Why is this going to benefit me? You know, I wasn't asking and I'm being told. How do I do that? And that's the first thing you've got to address. So therefore, looking for pain points. Because at the end of the day, why are we introducing this is for all the things in service management, benefit, et cetera. And that can be in different elements. But the point here is sharing that first of all, and then listening to their day-to-day or whatever, or putting that down through the organization and turning it and making it real. Because once you make it real, people suddenly see there's something in for me. You know, why is Zoom? We have no choice potentially. But the other thing there, people start saying, oh, I'm doing a Zoom call and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And it was portrayed in a very positive way. And then, of course, you get people thinking, hang on, I don't want to be left out. And in business, you know, I don't want to be doing it wrong. I don't want that to go against me in my appraisal and everything else. So, you know, I want to come on and I want to take this forward. And looking across the parts of the organization to make it real for them. Then looking for those evangelists that can take things forward. And yes, you can do quick reference cards and we did all of that and we did it in different languages and everything else. But at the end of the day, I think to Simon's point, you know, if you can get the technology to come across and you can explain to people and they can see and it's intuitive, they'll start to use it and therefore adoption. Because you can have great technology, but if people, I don't think, get that, it comes back to the thing we've talked about in previous podcasts with regards to the people part and how important that is. And I think David especially talked about that. Then people all look for workarounds. People don't like change. You know, we all like what we do and we have a routine and that's it. And in the workplace, how do I evolve? How do you get people to evolve and take that on board and make it a success and a win-win for everybody? So to your point, Chris, the thing there was looking at different parts of the business globally, different challenges, whatever it may be, cultural challenges, all of that, and aligning. And again, I think David mentioned this in previous podcasts as well. Or Amy, it's not one fits all. And therefore, rather than just standing and go, this is the way we do it in the UK, probably isn't going to work somewhere else. You've got to make it personable.
So David, a question for you then, and this is initially to you, but open to everyone really, to kind of muck in on. I suppose where an organization's been through, let's say, some fairly aggressive M&A activity, and they're looking to create one IT or group IT, and there's a big program of integration. How do you support users in adopting, say, new technologies, new products, new service provisions, if they're aware that one of the organizations that they're kind of integrating into isn't really changing up too much?
Wow, thanks for that. Well, I think we're all going to talk around a similar set of themes, but so I'm going to, at the risk of repeating what's been said, but you need to understand who those impactors and influencers are that have that perception and identify them and work with them to not necessarily alter the perception, but alter how the perception is portrayed and you portray it in a positive manner. Now that isn't necessarily fibbing. You know, there are usually positive circumstances to any number of scenarios. And then it's how you do that and how you start to take people along. And if you take organizations I've been involved with, you know, you have a certain level of personnel within the organization that set the agenda, and they've set this particular agenda. So we've no choice really but to follow now. Then there's people within the organization that may have an opinion and they can influence others, and you identify who those stakeholders are and you work with them to understand how you can influence others and the challenges you need to face to influence others, because not everybody's going to want to get on board. And you can do that through a mixture of things, but the one that I tend to use is very visual. I use a tool called PictoChart, where I every process I write, I put it into a picture. And that's a lot simpler than a Word document. Believe me, it's a lot simpler than the formal process you need to go through to deliver a service. And also, it's fun. PictoChart's just a fun tool. It aces presentations every time. not because I'm any good, but because they've got really good stock in there. But the point being that you lift people from the terms, from the words, from the negative cycle of what they believe is going to happen into a, that looks interesting. And you've done something a little bit different. What's in it? And going back to what was said earlier, what's in it for me? And you start to build from there. And I think we have an altogether different challenge in business, so to speak, than we do as consumers. But if you look how the consumer world is evolving now through our mobile platforms and through the likes of Zoom, you're not given a choice when they upgrade. You're not given a choice when they make changes. You are influenced by their key users that's a good thing. Or they just update you overnight when you plug your phone into the charger and off it goes. Now, we don't have that benefit of being able to do that. So we have to take people on journeys. Sorry, Simon.
It's really key, actually. So it's about choice. So you have a choice whether you change from an Android to an iOS. But you join an organization and you join the organization and you have to consume the technology the organization chooses. So the user doesn't have a choice. So for me, therefore, it's about having a repeated method and having repeated good experiences with adopting other technology, using your change evangelists, your champions, your user forums, using all those good cards and all those methods that we've been doing for years, using an effective learning management system, and about evidencing time and time again that IT are a trusted partner, making the right decision for the user, that they know the business and the business requirement. And then generally, users will be on the journey. But if you do something different every time, if you don't have a defined model, you don't have a change management plan, then of course it's going to fall flat on its face. And it has for all of us many times, I'm sure.
Do you think,
yeah,
to that point then, do you think it's almost kind of being too forceful in, where you've got an organization that is, I don't want to use the term archaic or kind of old school in terms of how they adopt new technology, to kind of present, say, tech bars into that kind of organization to give a bit more presence of IT and equally support and also on at the same time advocate kind of new technologies that are being introduced or have recently been introduced. Do you think that's something that would work well for those kind of organizations, or do you think there'd be a lot of pushback because it's almost being kind of forced down their throat, so to speak? That's a good question for any of you.
I think it would be welcomed because you might be archaic at the office, but you're not archaic at home. Mm-hmm. And actually, you are a consumer of Zoom when you're in lockdown at home on your Friday night quizzes, then you can use it in the office. And it's about giving your user base confidence in the decision that IT are making and that you're doing the right thing. Tech bars, for me, I'm not the biggest fan of them. I just don't particularly like waiting in a queue, right? So I'd rather call someone up and really comfortable getting remote support for 24/7, service desk, who answer my calls straight away, but others don't. So I think you need to provide an omni-channel. You need to provide an omni-channel approach. And most organizations have kind of got somewhere near that. I mean, the rollout of AI and chat functions at a service desk, but even to the extent of, just the self-heal capability in products like NextThink, where actually before it's even happened, it's been fixed. Mm. And that's quite exciting service management.
Do you think then next point on, well, next question on the point you just made, do you think people are going to adopt with open arms kind of self-service tooling as the end user? Do you think that's something that, I mean, does it again depend on industry? I mean, if you look at Rob, where you've come from and the retail space and FMCG and Simon, more kind of insurance, financial services, banking, David, obviously a fairly wide array of organizations, but is it very much dependent on the type of organization and their, what they've been led to expect through, white glove service or premium levels of service if they're in investment banking, say?
I think just chiming in there, I think that the end user population changes. And the people that are coming in through the front door now that are the future have different expectations of what they want to use, and they walk in, it's kind of like, what's this? what do I do with that, right? Is it, you know, do I love it? Is it border? What is it? I don't know. Because they use this, right? And they interact. So organizations have got a workforce coming in that have different expectations, I think, of how things are going to be. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the people side and that, and from service management, the organization has got to give those interactions, those experiences, I think, which makes that workforce, or you're going to do a lot of training backwards on how things used to be. And that's a cost, right? And is that going to add value? And what do you do? And I see this with people with my older children applying for jobs. And there is an assumption from your IT literate. And there are generations I also have experience of in other industries who come in and you say right click and these people do not know what you mean. So just two extremes there. But I think, you know, the demographic is changing.
If I could just add to that, it's really interesting just looking at our screens now. So this is my office and I have, that's all I have. That's my office and my laptop. I don't have a docking station. I don't have a screen. I don't have a headset. I've got a charger. Rob, your office, you've got books. And we're completely different users consuming technology in a completely different way. And we still need to be serviced by IT. And that's actually really complex. Thinking about the future, with bring your own device and all this kind of technology on demand, I have no idea how we're going to support it, to be honest.
Sorry,
David. Sorry,
Rob. No, after you, Rob, go.
I was just going to say, sorry, just on that point, how we support it. And you touched on this before, but you know, you have an iPhone. And I'm an iPhone user, so I use that as an example. I make those decisions when I go to iOS, whatever, and it's my journey. And I accept that because I do it. Again, younger generations, you know, as soon as they hear a friend mention it, they want it because it's new and I don't know why I want it, but I want it. And all those things that it brings on back to service management, you know, change management doesn't come into that. Did you do it back? You know, all this stuff, you know, it's consumable and it's now. And that's the way it's going. And therefore, you know, challenges are here. But does the business turn around and say, actually, BYOD, here's a disclaimer. You know, do we turn around and try to tell people, no, you can't go to IS25 because, you know, that doesn't work, but I've already done it. So do we not end up just supporting it anyway?
Yeah, it's a minefield. I mean, I know of a real example in the last couple of months of people onboarding and not getting the kit they need to do their job and either using their own kit or going on Amazon and ordering kit, which has arrived within 8 hours. So, you know, those choices exist outside of the workplace, and we have to make sure that we support and deliver services to people appropriately. And there's an adage in going back to IT service management of adopt and adapt in ITIL. And it's true that there is no one size fits all. We have to adopt and adapt. We can't, going back to the question, we can't force something down people's throats. We have to take them on that journey in a manner that's appropriate to the audience. And we have to be appropriate in different ways to different members of the audience. And that it's no longer suitable just to say, well, it can be suitable for some organizations, but it's no longer suitable for the majority of organizations just to say, this is exactly what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. Because there's so much choice outside of the four walls of the office, which now no longer really exists at this present time, that people can just go off and do their own thing. And you've got to try and have some governance around that, some guardrails.
David, just to chime in on that point, a real example during this pandemic of an organization onboarding somebody remote, and on their first day, the person's trying to work out what they should do. And the answer came back, log on. And it's like, what do you mean log on? And it's like, well, you know, you fire up your laptop and all that. Yeah, but I'm at home and I'm using my own. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, no, normally we have people come into the office. So here's a new thing about, okay, well, how do I get around this? Oh, well, you need to know things now, don't you?
Yeah, you take, I was on an ITSM coffee thing in summer, speaking with a university who said to everybody, go home and study. They didn't have an IT service desk that could cater for people calling in and saying, how do I log on? How do I get to this lesson plan? How do I do this? Their knowledge base was purely based around logging onto their domain in their building on their network. They had to adapt very, very quickly to their audience because their audience was the same, but the circumstances had changed. And they did it really successfully. But you know, we in IT service management have to think ahead and understand that we have to do those things before they've happened, not when they've happened.
Yeah.
I think there's a common theme to sort of conclude that the conversations we've had over for the last 2 hours or 5 days, those listening in or watching. I think in reality, the importance before you even start looking at how you promote service management, you've got to get close to the business. You've got to stay close to the business. You've got to understand their needs today, but also understand how those needs evolve. But equally, marry those needs up against their expectations. And I think that's kind of the biggest challenge here. I think once you can build those relationships and you're truly understanding day in, day out what those needs are and what how they might change, you're able to deliver a better level of service and products that align closer to what they're hoping to achieve and business objectives and so on and so forth. I mean, just to kind of wrap up, is there any kind of final statements that any of you would like to make on this topic, broadly speaking, that we've discussed over the last couple of hours around cost transparency, around kind of business aligned service architecture and modeling or anything else for that matter?
I'll give my goodbye speech.
Yeah.
ITIL guiding principle, start where you are, live your life by it.
Fantastic. Anything from you, David?
And I'll take the next one, progress iteratively.
And Rob?
Well, I think aligned to your customer, we've talked a lot about that. And as we were just discussing, to me, the challenge is coming up for everybody is there's new generations already here. And just because the old saying of just do it, that the business is going to be forced to adapt because the workforce coming through has different expectations. The world has given these people, you can get a baby these months, probably a 1 year old that can switch photos on a device. And to one of the points that Simon said a few days ago, if a baby can do that at that age, then by the time that they get into the work environment and service management has to support them, gee whiz, it's going to move fast, guys.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thanks again, guys. I really appreciate it. And also to Amy, who joined us earlier on. So clearly promoting service management is a longstanding and a notorious challenge for a lot of organizations. In fact, all organizations. And whilst I feel we've covered quite a lot off in today's discussion, I hope for those that have tuned in, you found this insightful, but we'd love to hear some of your ideas and real life examples of what's kind of worked for you. So please do get involved in some debate in the comments below. But from me and from the panel today, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.